hello and welcome to a beautiful and sunny Friday afternoon. This is a Juno afternoon, and I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. Thanks for joining me. Today we've got a really interesting and special show for us today. We're going to be doing a preview of the biggest drag show of the year. We're going to meet Juno jazz and classic musician Rhonda Ross, who's going to be playing here this weekend. And the really special thing we're going to be doing is we're going to have a lot of guests come in, all part of the K2 family, paying tribute to our longtime KTOO program manager and employee, Jeff Brown, who's going to be retiring at the end of May. We're going to have remembrances from lots of folks. It's all going to be happening coming up on this edition of Juno Afternoon, right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The head of Canada's largest Native organization says the federal government should delay legalizing marijuana for at least a year. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the government plans to make marijuana legal by the end of the summer.
Perry Bellegarde is the national chief of the Assembly of First Nations. His comments about the delay came after the Senate Aboriginal Peoples Committee released a report after it studied what impacts pot legalization would have on Native communities. The committee says those communities need more time. And Bellegarde agrees, adding that it would give Native groups time to consult with their people because Native groups were not originally consulted about the legislation.
We've always talked about duty, consult, and accommodate. So there's issues of education, about health, about the excise tax. Again, we weren't part of those dialogues and discussions. So if that's what the Senate committee or the report's recommending, we'd concur with that because it does affect our people as well.
The Senate committee described the issue as an alarming lack of consultation with Indigenous communities. The report adds that time is needed to also develop culturally appropriate educational materials to make sure Native people understand the new law. And there must also be addiction and mental health support available and discussions about tax sharing. Some reserves also want the ability to enact their own bylaws on the sale and use of marijuana, such as they already do in barring alcohol sales. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The University of South Dakota Center for Disabilities is launching an educational outreach effort focused on Native Americans. The Oyate Circle will host workshops in tribal communities, as South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Jackie Hendry reports.
Jim Warren is a member of the Oglala Lakota Tribe and has more than 20 years of experience running disability-focused training groups in San Diego, California. He's been hired to lead the new program and says he's excited to help his own tribe and others in the state. Warren says the workshops will include input from disability counselors, tribal vocational rehabilitation groups, and staff from both USD and tribal colleges.
I want to have kind of a buffet of services and awareness in terms of where folks can come in and just be aware of the variety of services available.
He says each workshop will produce a handbook of materials for participants that he calls Disabilities 101. Warren says rates of disabilities are disproportionately high for Native Americans, but treatment can be difficult to find.
And a lot of that has to do with the poverty realities of many of our reservations, as well as the health care. The Indian Health Service does what it can, but it's underfunded, so therefore doesn't have the access to a lot of the disability specialized services and supports in the medical field.
In addition to partnerships with tribal colleges, Warren says the Oyate Circle will also give diversity presentations to the State Department of Health and Human Services. For National Native News, I'm Jackie Hendry in South Dakota.
The Oyate Circle's first workshop is May 25th at Oglala Lakota College, with more scheduled around the state in July. The House Appropriations Committee Thursday adopted an amendment to support tribal victim service programs. It was adopted by a voice vote. The McCollum-Cole Amendment modifies the Commerce, Justice, Science Appropriations Bill. Without it, tribal funding would be cut from the Crime Victims Fund. Tribes and Native organizations hope similar language will be included in the Senate version of the bill, which is expected to be marked up in June. The four-day Navajo Hopi Honor Ride began Thursday in St. Michael's, Arizona. Motorcyclists started the event in 2003 to honor Lori Paestiwa, the first female Native American to be killed in combat. This year, participants will cover 1,000 miles in Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, and Colorado to honor veterans and those who lost their lives in military conflicts. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the law offices of Sanofsky Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, and online at www.sanofsky.com.
Support by BNSF Railway, moving our economy for over 165 years. Our vision is to operate injury and accident-free with safety programs, training, and technology. More at bnsf.com/tribal relations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Support for KTOO comes from Pavitt Health and Fitness. Locally owned and open 24/7, offering fitness classes, childcare, and summer memberships for exercising on those rainy days. More information at gopavitt.com. Pavitt Health and Fitness, for your total well-being.
NOAA Fisheries reminds you it is illegal to shoot seals and sea lions without an exemption. In low fish years, these animals may become more aggressive due to hunger. Illegally shooting seals or sea lions could tarnish the gold standard reputation of Alaska's sustainable fisheries. Shooting seals or sea lions could result in a fine of up to $20,000 and a year imprisonment. People and seals and sea lions can coexist. To report an incident, please call NOAA Enforcement at 1-800-853-1964. This message brought to you by NOAA Fisheries.
It's not raining anywhere.
No, it's not. Thank goodness.
but always a fun song to play when we're talking about drag shows coming into town and having fun. James Hoagland's here. James, thanks so much for coming in.
Hey, Andy. Thank you.
And we've got a couple of really fun things to talk about, fun events to talk about. And let's kind of the big one. Let's talk about it. Glitz 2018.
Glitz is back. This is our fourth year doing the biggest drag show in town. We are at Centennial Hall again. And this year we're going to 2 days.
Because it's too big to contain in one day.
Yes, we've sold out every year, and we've had to turn people away, and this year we don't want to do that. So we have a Saturday night show, and we have a Sunday afternoon show to accommodate everybody.
That's really fun. So yeah. This is June 16th and 17th.
Yes, and it is the end of our Juno Pride Week.
Right. So as you say, it sells out. So let's talk about tickets, first of all, and yes. About that, right? It's already selling.
It is. Saturday is almost sold out.
Already?
So,
okay.
It's been on sale for 2 weeks. You can get tickets online at glitz.brownpapertickets.com. Super easy. You can go to the SEGLA website, SEAGLA.org, or on Facebook, social media, or just ask your friends and neighbors where to get tickets. I'm sure they'll point you in the right direction.
And as you were saying, it's the culmination of Juno Pride Week. Let's talk about how that's come to be and kind of the evolution of that.
Yeah, so we, in Juno, we celebrate Pride, which is lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community Pride Week.
I remember that being kind of called Gay Pride Week for a long time.
Right.
And it became more and more encompassing of other folks.
Exactly. Yeah. It's evolved over the years, and we want to be as inclusive as possible, and each community, each segment of the broader LGBT community has said, well, we want to be in there too, and we need that recognition. So we at SEGLA, embrace that, and we want to be as inclusive as possible. So here we are in 2018, and we're still celebrating Pride, which started about 40 years ago, 45 years ago, and we're still fighting these battles for equality and for civil rights for the LGBT community. You know, we just won a huge battle in Anchorage. They were trying to pass a law against transgender people, and people came out and the community said, no, we don't want to do that. We're evolving, we are moving forward, and we're not going to do that anymore. So there are battles like that that happen all the time, all across the country and across the world. And so that's why we're still here. We're still coming out saying we are proud to be who we are. We're part of the community. We love being part of the community, and we want you guys to celebrate with us.
Does it feel, this is a personal question, but does it feel easier to be a gay person today than it did 20 years ago to you personally?
For me, yeah. And yeah. I've been out now. This is my 20th year.
So I guessed.
I turned 20 in gay years in December.
I didn't know there were gay years.
Oh, yeah. It's a whole thing. It's a whole thing. And this is like the glitterversary. So, like, you give glitter on... No, I'm kidding. We don't go into all that.
That's...
But, no. So, I mean, for me personally, yes, of course. It's been a long journey. But, you know, I am happy and I've got... I'm married, I have a husband, and, you know, I have a wonderful community and friends.
Things
and,
that maybe we couldn't have even predicted would be possible 20 years ago, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, I came out in high school. It was my senior year of high school. And so I think, you know, today, still for young people, it's still a challenge. There are still hurdles and family issues and school issues and community issues that make those teenage years really complicated. And so this is sort of one more layer on top of that. But I think depending on your situation, it can be easier or harder, you know, depending on where you live, being in a small town, being in a place where it's culturally not accepted or a family that doesn't support you or maybe a religious background. So it's really different. But for some people, it is quite easy.
And I think it seems like these kind of very public celebrations of that, of being gay, of living a happy lifestyle, is something that's really important still to those people that are, you know, maybe having that struggle. Or
absolutely.
Maybe just everyone in general, just feeling
just
that there's a community
that
there
is a possibility to be happy. And successful and to have a job and to be with a partner or, you know, be out in the community and have friends and have family support. Those are all really important things to see. You know, personally, I may not feel like I'm fighting for my life every day, but it's important for me to show affection to my husband in public because I don't know who's out there struggling and who's watching and who may see that. And that may really mean something to mm-hmm. them because mm-hmm. I know it did when I was younger. So now I'm sort of repaying the community in a way. And, you know, if it helps somebody else out there who's struggling, that's great.
Yeah. It's fun to just, I wanted to just talk to you about that part of it a little bit because often we see we just want to make sure that we don't trivialize the event, right? We see the fun of parades and of celebrations like glitz, but that's in celebration of real accomplishments that have been made.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, right.
And even in this community, you know, a couple of years ago was the first time we passed a non-discrimination ordinance that protected LGBT people. I mean, that was only two summers ago. You know, that's recent. You know,
yeah.
These are real issues. I mean, there were people who could get fired from their job, could lose their housing, could get denied a loan at a bank because of being LGBT or being suspected or whatever. And now that's finally illegal. So, you know, it's a big deal. And those are the accomplishments that we're celebrating with a big, huge drag show.
Okay, which sounds perfectly appropriate to me. So let's just talk about the drag show a little bit. When
yeah.
people go to glitz, if they haven't been before, what are they going to
expect to see? If you haven't been before, I'm sorry for you, but no, because we've had some incredible performances. We bring in guests from out of town every year, so we are bringing back, due to popular demand, last year our drag king blew the roof off of Centennial Hall, and he's coming back. His name is Spikey Van Dyke, and he comes to us from Tampa, Florida, and he does a kind of performance that you have never seen. He's a pioneer in the community. He was one of the first drag kings who really broke through. He was just featured in Elle magazine about his makeup transformation into his male character. I mean, it's just incredible stuff. So he's coming back. We also have from RuPaul's Drag Race Season 7, Jasmine Masters, who's coming up from L.A., and she is a hoot. She is so much fun. She's also a Patti LaBelle impersonator, and she has performed on stage with Patti LaBelle numerous times.
Really?
Yes.
Now that takes some nerve.
Yes,
Get up there with Patti LaBelle.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, it does, and she's great. So she's a seasoned entertainer and can't wait to come up to Alaska for the first time. And then returning, we also have Delighted to Be Here as our host, and she is a live singing drag queen who was on America's Got Talent, got three thumbs up from Howie Mandel, Howard Stern, and –
I don't watch it.
I don't either.
But like Christina Aguilera or someone like that.
Someone like that. Anyway, they
Britney?
Love her. We love
Britney
her.
On that one? Maybe it was Britney. I don't know. Anyway, I don't know.
Oh, it was Heidi Klum.
There you go, Heidi Klum.
There we go.
There. See, I'm so knowledgeable.
Anyway, they're coming up. They're going to help us have an amazing time. And then we have 16 performers from Juno who are gracing the stage.
Cool.
And this year, brand new, we have a full cast production closing out the show. It is our tribute as a micro mini musical, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. So that is not to be missed.
That is ambitious.
It is
ambitious.
It's
going to be pulled off, though. It's glitz. And it's two nights, June 16th and 17th. So there are tickets still available, but Saturday is getting close to sold out.
Almost sold out. Okay. Our tables are gone. We still have some general admission seats left, but we still have tables for Sunday. And don't be fooled. Just because it's Sunday afternoon does not mean it gets any less fun.
Okay. And then just real quickly, let's talk about the greatest hits drag show that's happening this weekend. It's happening Saturday, so people can go check out Rhonda Ross, and then afterwards go check out your show over at The Rendezvous. What's
exactly
that all about?
We are starting a little bit later. So first show time is 9 o'clock. Second is at 11. They're two totally different shows, and it's called Greatest Hits. So it's your favorite drag performances from all of the locals. We've got a cast of 11, including me, and we're just going to have a great time as our sort of warm-up to Pride season.
That sounds awesome. James, thanks so much for coming in. Thanks for all the fun that you bring to the community, number one, all this great stuff that you bring, and all the folks, that you, all this great outside talent that you bring in for Glitz. That's awesome. So that's happening.
One more thing.
Yeah.
For Glitz, it is an all-ages show.
Okay.
So that's super important to us. A lot of times we have the drag shows at the bar, which is great for the over 21 crowd, but we want everybody to be able to come to celebrate Pride and Glitz.
Great to know that as well. James, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Have a great glitzy time in June, and have a great show tomorrow night. Sounds like a lot of fun.
Thanks, Andy.
Thank you. All right.
I peer around the corners of my mind. A danger zone I never should go in there alone. Destruction in my dreams and crimes that live in the past break their mummified prayer to tease and tempt me at last, to tease and tempt me at last. Sweep it under my pillow, tuck it beneath my heart, hide it behind my memory on the highest shelf of the forgetful part. Throw it inside the cupboard, hidden for all time, always just out of my reach.
That's the beautiful voice of Rhonda Ross you're hearing, and Rhonda is here in the studio with us right now. Rhonda Ross, thanks so much for coming in.
Hello, thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
It's a pleasure to meet you, and you're here to perform tomorrow night, and you're also here with your husband who plays in the band with you as well, Rodney
Kendrick. Yes, and that's him on that recording.
Okay.
Around the corner, that's him on piano.
And he says he's rehearsing right now, so he can't be in the studio with us, but
we have third-party verification.
Okay, he's rehearsing. There might be a copy in there somewhere, but he's rehearsing. Okay,
yes.
Very good.
Yes, well, we're really excited to be here. To be part of Juno Jazz and Classics tomorrow night.
Tell me a little bit about your kind of musical journey. You have, I think most people know, you have a very famous lineage of parents, Barry Gordy and Diana Ross are your parents. I would think I'd get as far away from music as possible if those were, you know.
Yeah, a lot of people say that. Like, why would you try? Why would you even try?
Right.
But But, you know, my mother is an incredible mother, and she raised five children to believe that we had something valid to offer the world. Just our own perspectives and our own experiences were valid. And three of the five of us are performing artists, and two are entrepreneurs, and we live our lives that way. So I'm trying. I believe that I have a voice that I want to share, a perspective on life and the world that I want to share.
Some of the material I read about you described you as a social artist.
Yeah.
Now, what
I do consider myself a social artist, and what I mean by that is that my music is in relationship with and in response to the world that's around me. There are some artists that like to say, my music is separate from the world, right? Leave the world at the door and come listen to this music. But I don't do that. My music is a conversation. It's a conversation about life, and it's responsive to life. So it's different in every moment, right? It changes from venue to venue, from audience to audience, and from moment to moment.
Do you feel that in a way that when you describe that, is that something that's an emotional response, or is it a response to political things, social things,
all of it,
political, just your human
social,
experience,
my human experience, yeah, and the audience's human experience. So we are in a dialogue, a conversation throughout our time together, and what happens in the room is unique, and it won't ever happen again, and it's never happened before, and so there are people who come to my shows over and over and over and over again because each time it's different. It's literally different in that the tempos are different and the banter in between is different and all of that. But also just the feel is different because it's in response to each other.
That's right? An interesting thing, because when you just talk about your music, you immediately jump to live performance of your music.
I do. I'm so glad you noticed that. I'm a live performer all the way down to the marrow in my bones. I will go into a studio, but that's not where my art is created, and that's not where it lives. It lives in the live performance of it. And matter of fact, when I write a new song, I need to perform it before I record it, a lot before I
just
record
really
it.
Just really work it out.
That's where I find the essence of the song. And so the record you were just playing is Rhonda Ross Live featuring Rodney Kendrick, and that is a live record of one of our performances. My other record, my most recent record, is called In Case You Didn't Know, and that was a studio record, but all of those songs have been performed for months and even years in some cases.
Are there songs that you do that with that you then say, you know what, I can't figure this one out, I'm not going to record it, I'm not going to continue it? They're the ones that...
Absolutely. There are songs that I can't seem to find on the stage, you know.
Do you keep them in your back pocket?
They're in my back pocket, yeah. And sometimes they come back out, and sometimes they don't. You know, I have songs that I wrote, and they didn't find their own legs, you know, and they don't come back.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the writing process for you? How does that work?
It changes for each song.
Each song?
Each song, it changes. But for the most part, it changes for each song.
You don't have a routine that you try to do?
No. I don't. My songs, sometimes, it depends. Sometimes they are led by the concept, the idea of what I want to talk about. Sometimes they're led by a line that will pop into my head, and I'll think, ooh, I'd love that. That's a lyric, you know, and I'll build the song around the line. Sometimes I hear the chord changes or even the melody or a bass line. Sometimes I'll hear a bass line and then find the song around that. It does remind me of what I've heard about sculptors, you know, that you're finding the sculpture inside of the stone or the clay or the whatever.
You just have to knock away what shouldn't be there.
You knock away what's not there,
yeah,
right? What's not supposed to be there.
Right.
So there's that sense of, I believe that the song exists and I'm just finding it or hearing it as opposed to making it,
mm-hmm.
Or receiving it. Sometimes I talk about a song being downloaded, you know, like in New York, you know, we have the subway system and, you know, you'll be underground and somebody will leave you a message. And when you get out, you know, it'll download into your phone, right? So it's like sometimes it feels like a song downloads into me.
That's an interesting way of putting it, yeah. Well, family, you've got your son here in the studio with you.
I have my 8-and-a-half-year-old son.
Actually, 3/4.
3/4.
Boy, Raif Henoch Emmanuel Kendrick. He's sitting next to me. And he's being remarkably quiet.
He's amazing.
Yeah, I think so.
It's good to meet you, Raif. Thanks for coming. Have you been to Juneau before, to Alaska before?
Yes, I have been to Alaska, Anchorage. This is my first time to Juneau.
And you came on a beautiful day. It's pretty nice. This is pretty awesome weather for us today. You probably heard that, yeah.
I mean, in Anchorage, I was like in the snowy weather. I got to go on the glacier and ride on dogs.
Oh, that's awesome. That's an Alaskan experience. I'm glad you got to do that. That's very cool.
Yes. Well, we homeschool him.
Okay.
And so he's able to travel with us.
Oh, that's awesome.
And
yeah.
I was just saying at lunch right before, it would break my heart if I would come here and know that he wasn't experiencing this with us. So what we do is we do our work, whatever that is, and then we build in a couple days so we can, you know, go around
great.
And see. So he can learn all of that. You know, he learns, and as I think all people do, so experientially, you know, that just being in it, you're learning so much.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely.
It's different than reading about it in the book.
Well, it's a family affair, right? Your husband, tell me about being in a band and playing with your husband.
Yeah,
a kind of full time job. I mean, like that's you guys got to work out a lot of stuff. And being musicians, you probably have different.
We do
ideas.
We have different ideas. When we met, we were both professional working musicians, and so music and our marriage have always been one and the same. They are intermingled, and we for a good 15 years worked exclusively with each other. But he is a little older than me. He's very experienced and very brilliant, if I might say so.
You're allowed to say
so. He's really brilliant. And I was in many ways his student and happy to be. And then about 5 years ago, I thought to myself, I need to go kind of spread my wings a little bit and kind of find a little bit more about who I am and what makes me tick as an artist. And so I did. And he was so generous to say, you know, go do that. So for a good few years, I was working on my own or with other musicians, not with him. We are now back together and as musicians. And it's been about a year since that was the case. And our first coming back together was actually Anchorage this time last year.
Cool.
And so for a year, we've been back working together. And it's incredible because it really is, you know, like two fully formed artists coming back together. And we do have different ideas, but we work them out well. We collaborate well. We have an unspoken language between each other. And it's wonderful to be able to travel together. Yeah.
Do you hear, I'm sure you must hear this, do you hear your mother's voice in your music? I mean, there's a obvious family resemblance,
yes.
Number one,
yes.
Meeting
yes.
you in person, but
yes.
also your voices have some of the same beautiful qualities.
Thank you. I do think we have similar qualities. And people hear that, and I can hear that. Also, a lot of the way that I sing, certain notes I'll hit or whatever, I do it the way she does because that's what I know, right? But I have a lot of other influences. I'm highly influenced by Abby Lincoln, singer-songwriter mm-hmm. Abby Lincoln, Billie Holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And I also love genres like gospel and funk and, you know, I love Shaka and Rufus. And you know, I love all that
yeah,
stuff, George
yeah.
Clinton. And so there's just a mix of a lot of stuff that that's it. That's
I mean, I'm
music.
Sure we all in some ways share traits with our parents, whether it's speaking, but most mm-hmm. of us, you know, most of us don't have parents who have greatest hits albums that are
right,
platinum,
that everybody,
you know,
right.
right, that are part of the canon of American music. So
yeah.
there must be pressure. You must have felt that. Is that something that's gone away a little bit as you form more as an artist? Did you feel it more when you were younger?
It's going away, but, you know, it could go away faster.
Maybe I'll just stop asking.
you know what it is? I'm doing my work, you know. I'm doing my work. I'm building my portfolio, my repertoire of songs that I've written, and I'm proud of them. And there's still expectation from some people, not everybody, and it's getting less, but there's still expectation that I would be a Diana Ross Jr., and I'm not, and not trying to be, you know. And so there is some of that. But my work has been, and to some extent continues to be, that I just do my work. You know, I just, you know, I do me.
Well, that seems like the way you're going to find satisfaction and peace in anyone's life, right?
I think that's the only way.
Right.
That's the only way. And so there's still some expectation. I'm sure there's some, you know, disappointed people out there who are upset that I'm not singing, you know, like a tribute. My concerts are not tribute concerts, and I'm not singing Where Did I Love Go and all
Do
of
you
that.
Do you ever wander to that territory at all?
No.
You just stay away from it. Stay away from it.
I really do. I stay very much away from it. And I sometimes make a joke from the stage. You know, my mother's also known for costume changes, right? Like, you know, 4 and 5 per show.
Yes.
I do none.
This is it.
You know, because I just feel like that's what's expected from her show.
Sure.
And there are certain things that she's already done. She's done it, you know. And I've also told people, you know, there is one Diana Ross. You know, and anyone else who's trying to, you know, replicate that's going to get their feelings hurt.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
And
yeah.
But you know, to that extent, there's only one Rhonda Ross, and I'm proud of what I'm doing and
well,
my journey.
It's beautiful work, and it's so fun to have you here in Juno. And Raiv, thanks for coming. It's great to have you here as well. And you're going to be playing tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Reggie, do you want to fill in on any of the details or?
Yes. She'll be at Centennial Hall at 7:30. Tickets are still available, and we'll probably still have some at the door. So when you get done enjoying the beautiful sunshine at Community Day, head on down to Centennial Hall.
Sounds great. It's going to be a great concert. Rhonda, such a pleasure to meet
you.
Thanks so much. Thanks for coming to our little town and playing music for us.
I love this little town.
Yeah,
oh,
good.
It's beautiful. I love it.
Wonderful. Well, when it's like this, it's hard to deny. It's a beautiful place to be. Thanks, Rhonda Ross, playing tomorrow night, and tickets still available, so make sure you go and get them. Thanks again.
Thanks so much.
P.S. I'm introducing.
Oh, you're introducing? Raiv is introducing. P.S. So another bit of a draw to the show. All right. Well, thanks to both of you for coming in.
Twice as many Alaska Native as non-Native adults use tobacco. Diseases that weren't historically common, like lung cancer, primarily caused from smoking, are now the leading cause of death among Alaska Native people. Celebrate the Alaska Native way of life. Pass down values, knowledge, and traditions, not tobacco. This will strengthen the health of generations to come. For free support, call Alaska's Tobacco Quitline at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com. Brought to you by the Partnership for a Tobacco-Free Southeast and Search.
Hi, this is Lauren with Juno Parks and Recreation. Splash into summer with Juno Pools. Take advantage of our new $129 summer swim pass for all ages, providing admission for lap and open swim, tot time, channel walking, water fitness classes, and more. Valid May 1st through October 1st. Remember, head over to Augustus Brown during Diamond Park's annual closure, May 6th through 22nd, and enjoy Friday night moonlight swim. Visit us at junopools.org and like us on Facebook.
if my words did glow with the gold of sunshine, and my tunes were played on the harp of strung. Would you hear my voice come through the music? Would you hold it near as it were your own? It's a hand-me-down. The thoughts are broken. Perhaps they're better left unsung. I don't know. Don't really care.
It's a Juno afternoon. I'm your host for this afternoon for Friday, Andy Klein. And joining me in the studio is the person that's been behind the Juno afternoon for many, many years now, Jeff Brown.
Hi, Andy.
How you doing?
Pretty good. A little shy and embarrassed.
I know. One of these days you're going to come out of your shell. And then watch out, world. So, Jeff, let's talk a little bit about, number one, you're retiring. You're going to retire.
Starting the 12th of never.
That's pretty exciting. Like
it
the
is.
Next step and the next stuff to do and having time to work on. You've always had so many different kind of pet projects that you've worked on. And, of course, everyone knows about the Juno What, and that's grown into the, what's the name of the magazine?
Real Alaskan Magazine.
The Real Alaskan Magazine, which is so fun. Every April 1st it comes out. Coincidentally, it comes out on April 1st.
And you planned it that way.
Yes. And, you know, among other projects that you've had, So that's an exciting thing to think about, all those different things. Do you have some stuff that you're thinking about right off the bat that you're already kind of planning on working on?
I want to continue the posters that I've been working on.
Those have been really fun. We've been hanging them up in the brewery, causing a state of confusion often.
It's my job, Andy.
Yes. You do it well. Well, let's talk a little bit about your kind of just your career here at K2. You started here what year?
I got to town in the Coast Guard in 1975.
And did you kind of start with K2 pretty quickly thereafter as a volunteer?
I walked into Merchants Wharf, the mall, and they were having their first membership drive. And that was cool. I listened to Fire Science Theater when I was in high school. And then spurred me on to make radio.
Yeah, we've always talked about, you and I have talked about that. I got the opportunity to work with you for a number of years when we were doing KXLL and KRNN was starting up. And you always talked about Firesign Theater as like one of those really key, that was like the light bulb kind of going off in a way, right?
Right. And then I was listening to the radio. I lived in the fire hall when I first got into town in the Coast Guard. And Cynthia Halterman was on the radio in the high school, room underneath the audiovisual booth in the high school auditorium. And she said, I have to be here because someone with a license has to be on the air. But I don't really have time to I've been working on a report. And so I let her say that a couple of times. And I called up, and she said, come on down. So I got in a secret passageway and started a radio.
Did you have a license through the Coast Guard stuff?
No.
FCC license? We're talking about those FCC licenses, which used to be these kind of vaunted licenses, right? They used to be the thing that got you on the air. You had to have that FCC license. And that was, that was the person that had that. You could then legally say the station ID at the top of the hour and all that stuff, right, came along with having an FCC license. Which
Elements 1, 2, and 9. And number 9 was the hardest one. This technical stuff.
Is that right?
And I went up to Anchorage to see my relatives and to take the test at the same time. So I passed my test barely. And started doing radio.
Oh, very cool. So that led into volunteering at K2, right? And it was still at the high school at that time, kind of in the basement room of the high school, yeah, and broadcasting from the roof of the high school, sort of? Is that where I guess that's where the transmitter was. I don't even know.
Right.
Yeah. Then it moved. What were the kind of moves that K2 did while you've been associated with K2?
From the high school, we moved to the 3rd and Gold Street, no, 3rd Main Street, where the Spam Can is now.
Oh, okay.
And then we moved to where the Rainbow Foods building is now. And then we moved here about 15 years ago.
Yeah, and it grew from, and there's been a number of growth spurts, right, for K2. One was moving to that Spam Cam building. How long was it there? Not to the building. It wasn't at the Spam Cam. It's where the Spam Cam is now, right? But it was a building.
It was a cigar factory at one point.
Okay, okay. And it was there for what?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think maybe over 10 years, though, right?
I don't think so. I don't think it was that long.
Not that long? Okay, and then it moved into the...
Well, what we did, we got a TV station and started doing TV. None of us really knew much about TV, but this is a time of people's lives in their 20s where if they see something that they want to do, they just, I'm going to do that. So we started a radio station. We started a TV station.
It's pretty exciting. It is. It's an exciting time. You're right. It was a group of people that were at that age and kind of had that idea. But
Perseverance Theater, the Arts
Council. Yeah.
The
TV was hard to do then. I mean, we think about video now as everyone has a video camera in their pocket all the time. But getting together the equipment, figuring out how to edit, all that stuff was really a big deal in the late 70s. Is that when it was happening?
Right, and we did a TV show called Evening Edition. Betsy Brenneman, one of my inspirational figures, started as the host of the program. And people from the community would just come on and do a sports show, a weather show. And they were making television. And that's been kind of what I've been involved in, letting people do radio and TV.
And I think that... I think that anyone who's ever worked with you knows that you have a philosophy that everyone has the ability and everyone has the, through public radio and public television, has kind of the right almost to be able to get on the air and express themselves on the air. It feels like that's something that's carried, that's been a philosophy of yours.
If you can talk, you can be on the radio. You don't even have to talk that much.
Yeah, and... So tell me a little bit about that, the effort to involve people in public broadcasting and public radio, something that really seems to drive you.
I don't know what to say. There's, over the course of time, hundreds of people have come through here, whether it be radio or television or both. And it's been exciting to watch people. As the past couple of days, I've been getting messages from people about my retirement coming soon. And... people say, Jeff, you taught me how to do radio. I'm still doing it. Isn't that great? And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've been on some email trains and been watching these people coming out of the woodwork, really, you know, and thanking you for getting them started or thanking you for helping them along the way in lots of different ways. And it's been really exciting and inspirational to see that people have, even if they haven't stayed with radio as something, or even if they, it's just something that sparked their creativity in a certain way. Kind of got them going in a certain way, you know. And that's kind of, I don't know, that was interesting to me to see how people took that faith that you had in their ability to be on the radio and do a show and took it in lots of different directions.
K2's been a lot of things to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Some people have memories just of listening to the radio. And some people have come down here and made radio and television. And I still think that's pretty fantastic.
It's a pretty cool thing. And you've, of course, been such a major part of it. So you're gonna continue to do projects, continue to do the posters that you've been doing. Are you working on a next edition of the magazine as well?
No, I like posters. They're neat, they're cheap, they're affordable.
And That's true. That magazine, that was a big project, right? I mean, the printing and getting advertisers and all that stuff was really a major project.
My favorite time is when people put it down on in your living room table and people come over and they thumb through it. And I can't count how many minutes it takes for them to get wool's being pulled over their eyes.
Yeah, it doesn't take too long, right? I mean... pretty good humor in there. Pretty immediately realize something's going on here with this magazine.
Family friendly.
Yeah, that's right, and family friendly. I think that's a big part of you, your ethic as well, as far as what's happened on the radio. Something that I should definitely want to bring up is We Like Kids. You had such a great run with that program.
Yeah, that was on 50 stations across the country.
Yeah, it was when I got here in 1991. And when I was here, We Like Kids was a big running operation and, like, really the big export of KTOO was We Like Kids. It was in all these different markets, all these different stations, and something that a lot of kids, of, especially of a kind of certain age, really remember coming down, being on the show, listening to that show. And I think that kids...
People still think it's on Tuesday evenings at 7:30.
That's right.
6:30.
And kids has been... Inspiration for kids has been a big part of what's inspired you through the years, too.
That's right. I started doing music with my friend Billy Hudson, and that expanded into balloon animals and magic tricks and just having fun in general.
Well, that's something that you've certainly brought to K2 through the years. Jeff, thanks so much. I want to thank you personally for all the guidance and that you've given me through the years. And just working together with you has been an absolute pleasure. So thanks for that from me. And I think everyone who's been able to work with you or has listened to you through the years, or been to a balloon animal show or been to a magic show or been to a concert of yours through the years, just wants to thank you for what you've brought to the community and what you've brought to their lives.
Well, I get paid back by the smiles on people's faces.
Jeff Brown, retiring after
how many? 40.
40 years here at KTOO. Thanks so much, and we'll be checking out the posters and checking out all the great stuff you're going to continue to do. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Andy.
Well, Jeff is going to do something different. Jeff has joined us in the studio here with a whole bunch of people. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Oh, so many fans of Jeff's are here. Cheryl Levitt has stepped up to the microphone first. And Cheryl, thanks so much for coming in. And Cheryl Levitt Snyder,
yeah.
I should say.
Yeah.
And yes, sorry, I always get that wrong. We've worked together for too long. But Cheryl, thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah,
and
of course,
everyone here is going to share a little bit of an experience or moment or memory they have of Jeff, and just let him know as he sits here and has to take it in front of us and sweats bullets.
Well, I wouldn't have missed being here for anything today. I have had the good fortune of working with Jeff for 21 years. I started working at K2 in the spring of 1997, and at that time I had very little radio experience, and Jeff had already almost 20 years of radio experience, and so he was my go-to person for everything on how to do remotes. He could fix any technical issue that came up. He could give great advice on doing great radio shows and recording great audio. So I went to him often, and the best part about it is that he was always so kind and just ready to help me. The other thing I remember from that first summer of my life working here was one Friday afternoon, all of these pallets started showing up in the KTOO parking lot. And Jeff proceeded to put together a life-size maze for the community to get to walk through. And on that Saturday, dozens and dozens of people came to the K2 parking lot and walked through that maze. And that was just like my first like inkling into who this man was. And over the years, of course, I've seen many, many more antics and great just community-focused events that he's put together. And all of it, at the heart of it, is just wanting to make people happy. And that is the philosophy of which he has run his portions of the radio station here. As you've already mentioned, Andy, earlier, just anyone who has ever wanted to get on the air and be a part of stuff with us, Jeff has always said yes. I think that's a terrific legacy to be leaving, and is a big part of how KTOO is so integrated into this community. And that is a big piece of what we hope to carry forward, Jeff. And I really can't imagine being on staff without you here. So I'm thrilled that you have let us know that you intend to be a very active volunteer, and we're going to take you up on that.
Thanks, Joe.
And let's listen. Bill Legere is not here right this second, but he got to record this. Let's listen to a little something from Bill Legere here.
Hey, Jeff, it's Bill Legere. I think you are probably about the only person still here who predates me. We go back a long way together. And in fact, I think I first met you when I was just a kid coming through Juneau on my way home to the radio station in Petersburg, and I ended up sleeping on your floor at your house on Gold Street. But then I met you again when I came here to work at KTOO, and I just remember those days in the basement of the church when KTOO FM was in the building that Rainbow Foods is in now, and what a presence you were there and you have been since the very earliest days. I also am just so impressed that you are one of three people who started the Alaska Public Radio Network, you and I think Dennis Harris and Betsy Brenneman, and what a legacy you've given to the state with APRN. So it's hard to believe that we would be saying goodbye to you on your last day working at KTOO on your last couple of weeks, but I just want to wish you all the best and pass along my thanks and the thanks of the community.
It's Bill Legere, and coming up next, we've got a whole parade, a cavalcade of folks. John Gagin is here, a longtime volunteer here at K2.
Yeah, I moved to Juneau in 1978, and I learned my radio from Jeff and from Ed Schoenfeld, and I've been a volunteer here well over 20 years now, and Jeff gave me my nickname, Wolfie, from Wolfman,
oh,
and he was also the one when my comments or my song dedications got a little bit too political. He was the one that pulled me back. thanks for everything, Jeff. And I asked Jeff what his middle initial is. It's H, so I suggest we should rename KRNN as KJHB.
Ah, very good. All right, the first lobbying proposal here so far. John Gagin, thank you. Beth Weigel is here. Beth, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Andy.
What are some of your thoughts about the being able to serve and work with this guy sitting next to you?
Right. Well, I certainly got involved here at the radio station, being on the board of directors for several years, and got to know Jeff then. And I was really anxious and excited to get on air, so I kept pestering about being a volunteer and being a guest DJ. And he hooked me up with Jeff Herman. We kind of took off from there. But some of my memories are that, Jeff was like the person who taught me to be a master at the 29-second PSA. And really just...
And you've built a career out of it.
I've built a career out of it, from the voice of Eagle Crest to the voice of the library and now the voice of the City Museum. So he really helped me along with that. And I'd come in and we'd just cut that in no time. And it was just a really fun exercise to run through with him all the time over the years. And the other thing that, at one point I was really interested in doing and bringing in my class at the university when I taught out there, or as I teach out there, was I wanted to put together a longer program. And he certainly let me do that, too. And maybe you can help me remember. I was having a hard time remembering. It was like a Monday night show. It was community.
Focus on community.
That was it. And so he helped me get that all going.
How could you forget Focus on Community?
Well, I knew it was something community. he's been such a great support and help in teaching me how to edit audio and just put together really succinct, clear messages, and just being that interviewer that's always there asking you if there's anything else you want to add.
Beth, thank you so much. We have a surprise guest on the phone now. Go ahead. From where are you?
I am in Las Cruces, New Mexico.
That is a voice that we are very well aware of here in Juneau. Susan Fitzgerald, hello. How are you?
Hello, everybody. It's fun to be back on the KSU airwaves.
Susan, what memories of many, you have to keep it to just a couple here. What memories would you like to share of working with Jeff?
So, very briefly, I'm involved in a community radio station here. As I'm only on the air once a week, but the thing I miss most before I do a show is I want to say, Jeff, I need a piece of music to go with this interview. He always had the perfect piece of music to go with an interview. And I remember Potato Chips, and I remember Gorilla Grams, and I remember Live Day. I remember hauling stuff all over town and trying to make 12, I don't know how many hours of live radio we would do. And all the things that Jeff taught me how to do. I started out as a volunteer alphabetizing the library, and on a Monday morning after the folk festival, when nobody showed up to do a show, there I was on the air, and that's how it started.
And I think that's a great memory, Susan, because that's how Jeff affected so many people who volunteered here in little ways that became bigger ways and became cornerstones of the station.
Susan, say something for me.
It's good. It's, you know, I think about K2 every day. It's a constant. I always refer to it. It's my standard in what public radio, what community radio should be all about.
Well, I think Susan, we've been meaning to talk to you about your membership plan.
Hey, no, I'm a sustaining member.
Oh, very good.
Good.
Checks in the mail. Okay, Susan, yeah. Thanks so much. Thank you so much. We're going to get to some other memories here. That's great to hear from Susan Fitzgerald. Ricky D. Sitting patiently for once at the microphone.
Well, that's a hard one to do around Jeff Brown and this crowd, I guarantee you. I came to town in 1978, and 1979 I met a guy named Pat Duncan who did the Stormy Weather Show on Wednesday nights. And that show went on for 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, however long they wanted to take it. Well, he convinced me I needed to come in and do the show with him. And I said, okay, because I had radio background out of Southern California, and Jeff and I are both from Southern California. So make long story short, I did this on and off, but I didn't get along with the guy that was the manager at the time. And I stepped away, and I said, nah, I don't want to get involved. So fast forward a few years later, I came in to do an interview with Jeff. I was doing a fundraiser for AIDS and for heart people. And Jeff interviewed me. He goes, hey, why don't you should come do a radio show? And I looked at him. I said, I don't know. And well, he convinced me I needed to come do it. But he wouldn't give me a rock and roll show, and that's my background. He gave me a jazz show. So I had to learn jazz, and I went from A to Z on this jazz show, and I turned it into a jazz groove and funk show with his, you know, steering me in the right direction. And then he turned me on to the Flashback Friday show, and then Sticks and Stones. And then he started having me be the trainer for all the people that were coming in. And I've been in all of his magazines. I've been to his magic shows. I love this guy. Thank you for letting me live my dream, brother. Guarantee you. I'm going to miss your steering this station.
Coming up next, we've got a little bit of a quick memory here from Lori Scandling.
Hey, Jeff. This is Lori Scandling. You and I have known each other for 40 years, and the first thing I want to say is I love you. You're just an amazing person. You're a visionary, you're an incredible humorist, and you're a wonderful person as well. I do want to share one story. And surprisingly, it's not about public radio, which you and I have shared together in our lives for 4 decades. I just would like to remind you of a special role you played in my life when a bachelorette party was thrown for me here in Juneau, and how surprised I was when you jumped out of a cardboard cake in your underwear. I still have pictures of that, Jeff. I did not bring them to show them around K2. Today, but I might at another time. Thank you. You have so contributed to what KTOO is and so much to what our community is, to say nothing of the community of humor, in as much as you and I spent 30 of those 40 years in the blues cast together. Your creativity is mind-boggling. Thanks, Jeff. We do love you.
And Lori has lots of memories there with Jeff, as does Sister Grace, who's here with us from Chicago. Calling in.
Yes, indeed.
How are you doing? Hey, we only have a couple of seconds, but I just wanted to give you a chance to say hi and a quick memory.
Well, I'm glad to hear those voices. They just remind me of the house that Jeff built, K2. That's how I always thought of it. Jeff is a joyous person who always invited participation, and I really feel like he created and held the space for community and community radio. Certainly encouraged me to start my radio show, and I guess if I've only got a couple of seconds, I just want to say, Jesse, I love you, and good for you for taking a break, and I'm glad you're still going to be on the airwaves. And thanks for letting me participate today long distance.
Thanks, Grace.
Grace, thanks so much for calling in.
Hey,
I really
Jeff, you're
that.
There.
Jeff's here.
I love you.
Listening to every word, soaking it up, pretending like he doesn't like it.
And, oh, man, I had pages and pages of notes and things to say. I do want to say thank you, Jeff, particularly for things like the Golden Tape Deck Award. I'll never forget that. My name is on there somewhere. I love you for that and for everything you've contributed and still contribute to our community of Juneau.
Thanks, Grace. Ben Brown sitting here as well. Ben.
Well, you know, I'm a relative latecomer to a lot of people around the air today, but I think I first met Jeff back in 1993. I was a host for Thursday Night Concert back at the old location at 4th and Franklin Streets. And he's taught me a ton. I've burned my hands making bacon for the old breakfast. I burned my hands making salmon at the old seafood dinners. He's the one who finally got me on the air for Juno Afternoon. I am pleased to share my name with him. I'm proud that he took me ziplining and put me on the cover of Alaska Magazine, a real Alaskan magazine. And I just will have to say I love you as well, Jeff. Thank you so much, and best wishes for the future.
Katie B.
Well, so many of us owe infinite minutes of fame in this town to Jeff Brown. When I first met Jeff, when I was the age that my daughter is now in 1993 also, and I just remember when Callie was born and Jeff was absolutely overwhelmed on 4th Street, and I'll never forget that time. Thank you, Jeff, for everything you've done for our community and for me and for teaching me to cut tape with a razor blade.
John Silverston's also here in the corner. John, any quick words here?
I just wanted to say my memories are countless of Jeff walking in while I mouthed the words to rock and roll songs or beat time with a pencil and him saying, "Looks like you're having a good time," and just leaving. Well, yeah, thanks, Jeff. It's been great.
And Jeff, we only have a couple of seconds left, but just a gigantic thank you from all of us. Happy retirement. You earned it. And we're all saying happy Juno Afternoon from the house that Jeff built.
In Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone.